This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A very wet good afternoon. Gabby Girl from Digital News Asia here.
Hello, hello.
It's just the ladies today.
Yes, it is.
And what is this with Digital News Asia? We cover the tech ecosystem in the country.
Karam has trained you well, Frida. Mm.
First on the list, we talk about BlackBerry. Who? Anyway.
All right, so you told the joke before I could, or the punchline rather, but BlackBerry has recently stated that it plans to, in Malaysia, increase its focus on the enterprise segment. Now, you know, we all know BlackBerry has been struggling for a while now. Mm. So, you know, just to put the decline in perspective with some numbers that we've got, in its recently released full year financial results, BlackBerry Group's revenue suffered a decline over the past three quarters, and for the fiscal fourth quarter that ended 1st of March of this year, it registered revenues of $976 million, which represents a 63.5% decline versus the same quarter a year ago.
It's still making money.
Yeah, but 63.5% less. Yeah. And, you know, this decline in revenue was across all regions, and in Asia Pacific, which is, you know, really a cash cow region for so many tech brands. Fourth quarter revenue declined to $140 million versus the $385 million they had in the same period a year ago.
Okay, so I mean, okay, so the thing is, the writing's on the wall when you, you know, your numbers are dropping like that. Yeah? Yeah. I mean, okay, so there's still making money.
Well, the thing is,
it's making revenues. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, BlackBerry Malaysia's managing director Ben Quirin, you know, he admitted that the company has been rather passive and reactive when it comes to growing the enterprise space. He said, you know, we have to become a lot more active when it comes to engaging with the enterprise segment. Today, we haven't done that. The focus is more on the consumer. I mean, that's where we saw a significant part of our business growth.
Okay.
Then, but this is today.
Okay, so and that's the thing, right? I think they should just go back to what they're originally very good at.
BlackBerry has excellent solutions for the enterprise space, you know? Especially from a security standpoint. Mm. They're actually number one for mobile security platforms. I think number two being iOS, number three being Windows Phone, and then obviously the most vulnerable being Android, because it's more open source in that regard. Right. But yeah, but I foresee, you know, I think BlackBerry has to accept that it won't be that big major player it was years ago. You know, that their window of opportunity to ride the wave of being at the top of mind for mass consciousness, it's long gone. You know, you've got other brands coming into space. Right now, all the attention's on, you know, all these new smartphone brands coming out of China, you know, like Xiaomi being one of them.
Huawei.
Yeah. You know, even Lenovo makes, you know, mid to budget smartphone ranges for the Asian market.
So don't play in the consumer space.
They shouldn't, really.
Yeah, you know, just focus on what your core strengths are, which was the enterprise space.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, especially in Malaysia, a lot of companies still provide BlackBerries to their senior executives. Mm. So, you know, I'm pretty sure they have still have a foothold in this market. It's just how well they shore it up, especially with increasing competition for enterprise dollars, especially in offering mobility solutions.
Right. So Ben Quirin came on in, October last year.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm looking at your notes here. There's a journey we need to take and the work starts now.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, it'll be interesting for him to try and stabilize the BlackBerry position in Malaysia. Mm, he's got a decent chance.
Right. Digital Malaysia.
That's right. So the 9th Digital Malaysia Steering Committee has tabled two new initiatives at its most recent meeting, one to accelerate e-commerce via a nationwide cyber sale, and the other to improve the quality of life for traditional religious institutions, or Sekolah Pondok, through crowdfunding.
Okay.
So this, you know, let's talk about the Sekolah Pondok initiative first. I think it's quite interesting. I hope it does really well, because, you know, it's all about trying to offer, you know, Malaysian people outside of your urban hubs access to ICT tools and technology, and to show them, you know, or, you know, even let them kind of be creative and figure out where technology fits into their lives or their livelihoods and how they can improve it all. So, you know, this should be very interesting. It's being led by MDEC with the support of the Yayasan Pembangunan Pondok Malaysia. Yes, my Malay is quite failed. Thank you. I'm improving. So, you know, it's I salute such initiatives, and I hope it does really well. And it'll be really interesting to hear then the stories coming out of these things about, you know, the people who have discovered new ways to boost up, you know, either their income or their daily lives using ICT tools.
And this is, you know, social crowdfunding. I think this is your way to help, you know, because we always talk about helping. And a lot of us seriously don't make an effort to go there and physically help.
Yeah.
Which is actually a big need for them. But at least if we can support financially, why not?
Yeah, enable the keyboard warriors with a push of a button and sense. And, you know, the commercial sector is kind of helping in that regard. You know, before, you know, just thinking of buying something online with a credit card was just unheard of. Today, it's more like, you mean you don't do it?
Yeah.
So with that kind of phenomenon in tandem with these kind of initiatives, so then the thought of people kind of giving money or support via crowdfunding platforms becomes less of an alien concept, and then the more people will be more willing to embrace it. So, you know, should be good. Timing's about right, you know. And then what I think is interesting, this cyber sale that they're trying to do, which is kind of a copy of the American Black Monday, Cyber Monday sales, where most retailers online offer massive discounts on all their electronic products and even software accessories and stuff like that. It'd be interesting to see how it pans out. It could be the digital version of our, you know, Malaysia mega sale that happens once a year. So
a few times.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is it a few times?
No.
I'm not much of a shopper. But Rocket Internet's e-commerce properties, Zalora, Lazada, have done their own kind of Cyber Monday flash sales before, and they've reported, you know, really great traction from buyers and sellers alike. So with this kind of nationwide initiative, it might be a free-for-all. Although one of our commenters, a regular DNA reader, Dr. Gabriel Walter, pointed out that, you know, the American Cyber Monday was actually a natural phenomenon because that weekend is actually on the Friday. I think it's called Black Friday. Yeah. So the brick and mortar retailers have these massive, crazy sales, but it involves people going physically to the shop. So Cyber Monday occurred as a natural kind of after effect that for the people, that retailers realized that people, not everyone could make it to the stores and fight the crowds and stuff like that. So they decided, you know, to have a Cyber Monday sale during that same weekend.
Black Monday.
Cyber Monday. And Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Mm. So, but in this case, we're kind of like designing a whole nationwide cyber sales.
And this one will first take place in Kedah, right?
That's the pilot program for Pondok.
Okay.
The flash cyber sale is supposed to take place in the third quarter of the year.
Okay.
So that should be interesting. What's going to be really cool is to check out how e-commerce companies in the country can handle the strain from a logistics delivery and back-end perspective. Because, you know, regular kind of day-to-day sales, you would say it's at a decent kind of volume. But during a sale like this and, you know, Malaysians being, you know, suckers for a great bargain, you're going to experience crazy spikes, not just in the volume of traffic hitting those websites.
I just see myself venturing into that space.
All right. Mm. Please give me your credit card. I'm going to cut it up.
All KPJ hospitals to be on the cloud by end 2015. We'll discuss that right after this. Gabby Goh from Digital News Asia's Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Breaking financial matters, BFM 89.9.
It's Tech Talk. Gabby Goh from Digital News Asia here with me, Frida Liu. We've been going through stories affecting the tech ecosystem of the country.
That's right.
Yeah, what were we talking about earlier on? I was paying attention. BlackBerry. We talk about Digital Malaysia. Cyber Monday. So hopefully will be happening. Well, you know, plan to happen here. Pondok. That's good. Now we're going on to KPJ hospitals to be on the cloud by end 2015.
Yes, that's right. I think it's pretty cool. Yeah. So KPJ Healthcare, which is actually the biggest private healthcare group in Malaysia, expects all its hospitals to be running on a cloud infrastructure by the end of 2015. So on April 21st, they announced that they will be working with IBM to implement a nationwide cloud infrastructure so that it can operate more efficiently and serve its patients better. It would also apparently make them the first Malaysian healthcare provider to adopt the private cloud infrastructure, according to the company. And at the media conference that they held recently to tell people about it, President and Managing Director Amiruddin Abdul Sattar said that the group is investing 17 million ringgit into the project and believes that it can save up to 30-40% of its IT spending in the long term. So
Would like to see the costs of hospital bills to be reduced because of this.
Well, that's a matter you take up directly with KPJ. Okay. I don't think I can influence that, Frida.
You think, right?
Yeah. So, you know, part of the cloud initiative also involves having it, all its servers in one central location and then linking all the hospitals via the cloud. And then IBM will also be building them a disaster recovery system for the company to ensure data protection and business continuity. So, you know, what's interesting is that we've actually had the IT head of KPJ Healthcare at our last Disrupt last month, Dr. Mubashir, and he was telling some great anecdotes about the deployment of new IT tools to his stakeholders, which are all the doctors and the nurses on staff. And he said that one of the biggest kind of roadblocks to deploying new tools, like say using maybe tablets when you're making your rounds, visiting patients and stuff, has actually been the older generation of doctors.
Wow.
So on one hand, he's getting kind of like the resistance from the older generation, but then he also said that on the other side, all these younger doctors are coming up to him and going, why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? I have a tablet. I need to have all these documentation, electronic documents for, you know, my reports, medical journals and stuff like that. So, you know, it's really interesting to see the kind of generational gap when it comes to even the medical profession. These kind of moves are really great. When private hospitals like KPMG go onto the cloud and they start digitizing everything and doing, these kinds of consolidated solutions for their staff, it lays the groundwork for then government and nationwide kind of initiatives. Because things like electronic patient medical records. You know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what is the best way to deploy such a system. Because if you have a central database for, say, all your medical records, you know the pain when you switch from one doctor to another, one hospital to another, it's like a back and forth of envelopes of paper and x-rays and stuff like that. Imagine if all that information was in a secure central database that's only accessible by authorized users, like say you authorize your doctor to access those files because he needs an update on your medical history. So there's a lot of conversations happening around the world now about what's the best way to deploy such a system on a country level. Yeah. You know, who owns that data? Does the burden and responsibility for keeping those medical records lie with your medical provider? With the individuals, you know, how is it best? You know, and if you're going to secure the database, how are you going to authenticate users? You know, how do I know that, you know, it is indeed Frida Liu accessing her medical history records and stuff like that? So, but the first step is of course, having the service providers and guys like KPJ raising their tech foundations in that sense to a easier platform to migrate or integrate these soon to come kind of solutions. So that's interesting. The fact that they're doing this cloud stuff now, it's a great move.
Yeah, and I think so too. You know, at least kudos to them for doing something different. And you know, probably this will always. There's always the first person, the first company does it, and then hopefully that will be another.
And considering it's the largest private healthcare group in Malaysia, you can't do the thing. Well, only the small guys are doing it. It's the big boys.
We've got a question here, which you've asked. Do you want to talk about the magic launch tomorrow?
Magic. Yes.
Which stands for?
Oh, gosh.
Okay, go on.
All right. Is it the Malaysian Global Innovation and Creativity Center? Something like that.
What's the name? Cheryl?
Cheryl Yeo is the newly appointed CEO. She's moving back here to Malaysia after spending some time working in the United States. She's an entrepreneur, Silicon Valley credentials and all that jazz. And I think she's only been on the job like just over a week. So it's going to be interesting. The official launch event with Prime Minister Najib is happening tomorrow night at the Magic Building in Cyberjaya. It should be quite
It's the Malaysian Global Innovation and Creativity Center. Did you say that?
I got it right.
Well done. Okay.
Thank you. I have to stare at the acronym for many, many articles. So yeah, it should be interesting. This, of course, all coincides with the upcoming visit of U.S. President Obama. And the tie-ins with all the young leadership entrepreneurs.
Barry's coming to town.
Yay. Don't go into town. All the roadblocks, security lockdown. Yeah, that's not going to be fun.
All this, huh? All this kind of security.
Well, you know, he's the American president. it's not exactly...
Anyway. Okay, so Disrupt.
Yes, so yesterday, actually.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So we had our 17th Disrupt panel discussion last...
How was attendance?
It was actually really great.
I'm happy.
Yes, yes. So I think it's because of the topic. It really struck a nerve because the topic was leadership lessons from startups. And, you know, Karim got a little emo because it's a topic close to his heart, right? Because, you know, when you're building a startup and you're the CEO or you're the main founder, there's a lot riding on you. You know, you have to be everything. And, you know, and it's one thing when it's just three people. Yeah. What happens when it's 5, 10, 15, 20, yeah. 40? So I highly recommend anybody listening out there to check out our recap article that Asuhan wrote, and it's already on our website out this morning. And that session was so chock full of great, kind of brutally honest
anecdotes. Give me one anecdote. Give me one.
So on the panel we had, apart from Karim, of course, who's the moderator, we had also Cheryl Yeo, who the Magic CEO, and we also had Azra.
Oh, she turned up, okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Cheryl, for making the time. Mm-hmm. I know you're inundated with meetings and everybody wanting to pitch something to you.
Yeah.
And Azra Rahim, who's the co-founder of Slashes and Dots, and they were the guys behind Joomla, which they sold to a U.S. company a while back. And he now dabbles in angel investing, and he's thinking about, you know, what his next startup's going to be. And our third panelist was Aaron Gill of MyTaxi, who his official job title now, I think, CTO. Mm. And, you know, it was, they were sharing their horror stories, you know. Cheryl was sharing about how her first startup failed when she made the leap from consulting to entrepreneurship. And she did it in New York during the start of New York's own kind of startup boom slash wave. And she mentioned that what New York went through when she started her entrepreneurial journey is really similar to what Malaysia is going through now. So it'll be interesting to see how she brings her experiences from that time and apply it here in the country. You know, she was her stories, you know, she realized with her second startup that they kind of had to move to Silicon Valley. At that time, there was no other choice about it. And the anecdote she shared was like, it's as if you want to be a singer on Broadway, you have to go to New York. If you want to be in movies, you have to go to Los Angeles. So at that time, for her, what she wanted to do with her startup, she had to move to Silicon Valley. So her painful lessons, like one of them she shared was, you know, because of the move to Silicon Valley, she had to, you know, consolidate staff strength. She had to fire, actually, her roommate, who was also her first engineer.
Wow.
So she said that was a painful experience, and she learned quite a bit from that. Then, you know, Azra was telling stories about how... So for Azra, he's a technical founder. So he said his biggest problem being a leader in a startup was that because he's a technical developer, he always just wants to build things. And his biggest problem was letting go because he kept wanting to butt in to the developers he hired to say, no, you should code it this way, you should code it that way. So he said his biggest lesson was he had to learn how to let go and be the boss. And he said that he had no issues letting the marketing team do whatever they want because he didn't like marketing at all. So that was... But the best anecdote... I won't say the best, but the most emotional anecdote I have to say last night came from Aaron Gill.
Mm.
And he told this story about, so, you know, the story of MyTaxi is that Aaron is one of the partners now in the business, but it was originally conceived by
somebody else.
A few people, one of them being Anthony Tan, who in I guess high society circles is also known as one of the grandsons of the founder of Tanjung Motors, right?
Yeah.
So he was telling a story about the really, really early days of MyTaxi when they were just getting things going. Aaron got on board to help build and grow the company, and they were going around to every taxi cab company in the Klang Valley pitching the MyTaxi idea to them. And at every meeting they went to, they were, you know, the guys they spoke to were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. You know, really non-committal kind of responses. And then it was their final appointment of the day with the owner of Comfort Cabs Malaysia.
Mm.
And so they did the same pitch, and at the end of it, they were really down at that moment. They were like, oh, let's just give the guy our name cards and go, and we'll figure out, you know, a new way to tackle this problem, getting clients on board. And then when the Comfort Cab guy got Anthony's name card and he saw the full name, and he looked at him and said, are you any by any chance related to the guy or who founded Tanjung Motors? And things like, and he's a bit shy about the family connection thing. Mm-hmm. So he was like, yeah, he's actually my grandfather. Oh. And then at that point, the owner of Comfort Gabs disappeared on them. Like, he literally turned and ran upstairs to his office somewhere, came back down holding a little tiny model of a Datsun car.
Oh, wow.
And he said that, you know, years ago when I wanted to start Comfort Cabs, your grandfather helped me when nobody else would.
Wow.
He gave me my first 40 cars, these Datsuns, on loan so that I could start my company.
Wow.
I can't pay your grandfather back for what he did for me at the beginning of my career, but I can with you. And he gave my taxi 40 cabs right there.
Tears coming down my face.
Aaron was a little emo, yeah. And this story, and I think the audience was like, well, aw.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
So, and then, you know, Aaron being Aaron, he kind of quipped at the end. So the moral of the story is that the things you do today will have an impact on your children and your grandchildren. So don't screw it up.
Interesting, eh?
It was a great, I never knew that. That was the first 40 cabs came from that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So be kind, huh?
Because
you will reap what you sow.
Yeah.
Right? If not this generation, several generations down.
Exactly.
Gabby Go from Digital News Asia, and we thought we couldn't fill up the time.
Well, I'm channeling Karim right now.
Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.